Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Patrick Thompson to the broadcast. Patrick is the Executive Vice President of Administration and Chief Information Officer of Amedisys, a $1.5 billion healthcare company providing home health services to the chronic, comorbid, aging American population. Prior to his time at Amedisys, Patrick was the Executive Vice President and Chief Administration Officer of the Shaw Group, a Fortune 500 engineering, technology, construction, fabrication, nuclear, environmental, and industrial services company. He also served as Senior Vice President and Chief Information Officer with Turner Industries and spent time as a Managing Director of Accenture. Patrick has a bachelor's degree in accounting from Louisiana State University. I recently caught up with Patrick in his office in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and our interview covered World-Class IT Principle 1, People, as Patrick spoke about the kinds of skills he's building on his IT team to meet the needs of his business. Principle 2, Infrastructure, as he discussed the need to solidify the right infrastructure before addressing increased demands of IT services. Principle 4, IT and Business Partnerships, as we discuss Patrick's range of responsibilities beyond CIO at multiple companies and the advantages that he's garnered from that breadth, as well as a variety of other topics. Welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Thanks, Peter.
Patrick, I thought we'd start with a description of Amedisys. For those of our listeners who may not be familiar with your organization, can you take a moment to describe the company as well as your role in the company?
Absolutely. Amedisys is the largest home health provider in the country with over $1.5 billion in revenue and over 500 care centers across the country with 17,000 caregivers and employees. We also provide hospice services as well nationwide.
Great. And can you tell us a bit about your role?
My role at the company is Executive Vice President of Administration and Chief Information Officer. I'm responsible for HR, contracting, as well as information technology.
That's great. And I wanted to actually begin with that very point. Our listeners will recognize that you are not just the CIO, but the head of administration with the responsibilities you've just mentioned. And actually, truth be told, Patrick, you're an early example of a CIO who has taken on broader roles than just technology. You had a broader set of responsibilities when you were with Shaw Group, Turner Industries, prior to your time now with Amedisys. Can you talk a bit about your own thoughts from your own experience as to why the CIO role is conducive to taking on additional responsibilities?
Sure. What I've found in my career, with working with the last three companies and now Amedisys, is the CIO usually has a strategic seat at the executive committee level and is exposed to all aspects of the business. As technology becomes more and more strategic in companies, you tend to see everything from A to Z or from sales to execution in a business, and technology is a big part of that. So a CIO sitting in the executive committee really does see the big picture, from A to Z in the company.
That's great. It's such a formidable point, given the fact that, as you point out, there's a reason for the CIO to be involved with all the other leaders of the organization, really in ways that they may not be involved themselves. Obviously, in your current role, you have administrative responsibilities as well beyond the CIO. Can you talk a bit about the specific logic of tying those different parts of the organization together?
And sitting in a CIO seat, almost all aspects of administrative departments involve some type of people, process, and technology improvements, and there's always room for improving efficiencies through automation. When you sit in this role, you have the responsibility to see the big picture but execute, change with laser focus. And in doing so, you have an opportunity to manage a lot of resources towards a common goal. So human resource departments working on IT automation, when you see the big picture and you have that laser focus of resources towards the task, you tend to eliminate a lot of inefficiencies and do away with a lot of the barriers that maybe exist between departments like HR, IT, or sourcing. It cuts through some of the inefficiencies of working together towards a common goal.
Great points. And actually, it strikes me just in hearing your response, Patrick, that these are parts of the organization that literally touch everyone in the corporation. As you point out, IT is ubiquitous at this point, whether it's, you know, it's tools that are used to conduct one's business day in and day out, to engaging with customers, and of course, HR responsibilities. Everyone is essentially a part of the human capital aspect of the organization, as you point out, and even sourcing is something that is leveraged more broadly. Ironically, these are, each of them, functions within the organization that are not viewed as strategically universally. And I wonder to what extent it's a comment on your own experience, as well as obviously the views of your current and past employers, that more could be done by having a leader who could actually place these more forward in the strategic spectrum of what's done within the organization. Do you have any thoughts on that?
You know, I think depending on the company and the industry, these types of executive vice president or executives of administration functions overseeing IT, HR, sourcing, marketing communications, other administrative type functions, risk management, safety, all potentially lend themselves to achieving great efficiencies by having one vision overseeing how those departments operate and ultimately how they're supporting operations execution. I think it's very important that that administrative executive role really understand the business and align all of the functions to support and execute the business. So it might be a combination of HR and IT. It might be a combination of HR and sourcing. It could be a combination of other administrative functions. But I think if you get the right executive that really understands the business and tries to align all of the support functions to execute what the business needs, you tend to get a greater result. You get a lot of cost efficiency and synergies between those departments, and you tend to deliver projects a lot faster and on time and on schedule with one person overseeing the multitude of resources and departments. I would always keep accounting separate because accounting needs segregation of duty, you know, from a CFO perspective. So that's one area that I've never personally overseen in my role as a executive vice president of administration. It tends to be more the administrative functions that interface with accounting, but ever over accounting as well.
I see. Makes sense. And I was curious, given the sort of differences, generally speaking, or historically, about the people that make up HR departments, for instance, and IT departments, in terms of their educational background, the sorts of topics that they're most familiar with and work on a daily basis, the kind of language that they use, the degree to which they are familiar with the quantitative versus qualitative ways of evaluating their own performance or the performance of the organization, more generally speaking, do you see a blending of these kinds of backgrounds, given how historically apart the human resources and the IT functions tend to be?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up that question. In IT, actually, what I tend to do is actually go out and bring in resources from both operations and administrative functions. And because they have a good understanding of the HR, procurement, or operations functions, they tend to be good subject matter experts, and you can always teach them the technology piece. So there's always an aspect of, you know, an IT resource coming in as a technical person. You still have those programmers, developers, QA, analysts, that type of thing. But as I have formed departments, I've actually taken people out of sourcing and human resources and put them in IT as the subject matter expert, managing the development teams and the software teams. We call the term business system analysts, and basically business being first, system being second, and the analyst piece being third. So they have three skills. They have business skills, they have system skills, because we teach them that, and then they have analytical skills to reprocess and re-engineer workflow and automation.
That's great. What a great way to think about that. And how have you staffed that model? Is it people, or what skills are you looking for as the building blocks to developing those? You mentioned the fact that there are some skills that can be taught versus those that may be more innate. Do these tend to be people that have a certain skill set that you bring in first that makes them more or less qualified for this kind of a role?
Sure. I tend to look for people that are very process-oriented, that have an analytical mind, can dissect the problem, you know, break down a large project in small chunks. We like to say, you know, it's like, how do you eat the elephant? You know, you take one bite at a time. But somebody that can see the big problem, break it down, and then solve it in a methodical way. So people that are very process-oriented succeed very well in this role. And then they interface very well with the HR departments and the procurement departments because they were one of them. So they can talk their talk, they can walk their walk kind of thing. And that just makes for good alignment with the business and IT coming together towards common goals.
Great. Can you talk a bit about your own priorities for the foreseeable future?
Sure. As the Executive Vice President, Administration, and CIO of Amedisys, my focus currently is assisting the business with a new organizational execution model. And that involves human capital, human resources, IT, information technology, contracting, and operations. Now, the new model will have an impact on both efficiency and cost savings, but also automation and human capital retention. So you tend to, when you get in these roles, tend to assist more with operational type projects because of the resources that need to be aligned with operations like HR, IT, and contracting.
That makes sense. You also mentioned, or I've noted from your own background, that this is an organization that has grown a lot through acquisition. Do you have general advice on how to prioritize activities when attempting to combine IT departments?
Sure. You know, the success that I've had has been primarily focused on putting the right infrastructure in first. I think if you get the right infrastructure and the right platform in place, you can build upon that. If you're buying software, you're developing software, getting the right infrastructure in place, a sound foundation, connectivity, wireless and wired from an access standpoint, not having issues with automation from that perspective, then you can build applications in and automation efficiency on top of that. So that's the first order of business. And then that gives you the ability to go in and integrate back office capabilities, accounting systems, a procurement system, or human resource systems. You're putting that foundation allows you to scale and bring a lot of integration power to the table. What tends to happen, at least my experience in the last three companies, has been, you know, we become the integrators because these functions all work together. They're usually doing the due diligence and they're also usually leading the integration efforts because it's very transactional to change. So you wind up building the platform to actually be the integrator for the company.
That's very interesting. And again, not necessarily what the average CIO is doing, but returns to your logic from earlier, which is to say that yours is a role that is really at the center of so much from this perch that you have within the corporate structure with relationships and very strong ties with each of the rest of the business leaders, that it would make sense that this be a role that in fact is leading the integration activities when an acquisition comes into play. That makes very good sense. Very interesting. I wanted to actually return a moment back to some of what you were describing in terms of IT's role and as well as the other responsibilities that you have in becoming more embedded in the rest of the organization and tied and analytical based on the needs of the rest of the organization. As you have worked for several organizations, and I imagine that you've had reason to speak with and partner with colleagues of yours as leaders in other parts of the organization, other divisions of the organization who have differing levels of IT knowledge and curiosity, what way do you go about, what methods have you employed to get them to be more cognizant of what IT can bring to bear on their behalf?
You know, I would say that the business, we align all our IT initiatives with a governance process. And the governance process is actually made up of multifunctional leaders. So we have every SVP that's over a department or function sit on our governance team. And we as a team, not just the CIO, decide how to prioritize the projects that we have and which ones are going to have the greatest return to the company. So we do this as a team through a very formal, disciplined governance process. And that way it keeps everybody on the same page as far as what projects are in the queue, where the progress of those projects are, and as new ones come up, you know, are vetted and bumped up against the priority of the other ones to match up the resources that we need to get them deployed.
That makes sense. And so the rest of the organization's cognizant of the amount of time and money ultimately that's being spent on initiatives from IT on their behalf, and to become more engaged to make sure that the right priorities are being put forward?
That's correct. The governance process demands a return on investment, and there's, you know, measurable techniques that we use to make sure that that return investment is coming to fruition throughout the project and at the end of the project.
And building the skills within your team to become more familiar, I wonder what that journey looked like. I know a lot of CIOs have trouble getting their teams to think more based on ROI, the actual return on the technology investment that the organization is undertaking. Was there much of a learning curve there in making sure that your team had the right skills in place to be able to develop that kind of analysis?
Yeah, most IT organizations struggle with this piece, but I think it's imperative, you know, the CIO to bring that type of technique to any IT organization to be strategic. It has to start with, if you give me a dollar, I'm going to turn it into two. So in order to continue to get budgeted, funded for your both your OPEX and your CAPEX, I think it's very important to have an ROI calculator and a business case model presented in a governance situation that really clears the path for you for getting funds. Because if you can show that if you give me $10 million and I'm going to give you a return on that $10 million, then it pretty much sells itself. So I think it's just imperative. And most IT organizations don't take that approach and fail to really get the return and don't measure it and monitor it at the end. But we've been fairly successful doing that here at Amedisys.
Can I ask you, with regard to return, so often the benefit of projects, especially IT projects, don't commence until the project is concluded. And oftentimes a lot of organizations don't go through the exercise of going back and deciding how well did we do based upon those predictions. Do you have a process or post-project analysis that helps you evaluate whether or not the return was in fact achieved?
Sure. We have a financial, obviously our financial team is on the governance team, and they obviously help us with a return on investment to make sure it's real. And then at the end of the project, you know, we make sure that what was proposed as far as if it's synergies or cost savings or revenue increase, you know, did come to fruition. So we do have a follow-up through our governance model that allows us to present what was the results of those investments. And we look back on the portfolio every year to see if those things came to fruition.
Very good. Before I let you go, I wanted to see whether or not there are any sort of IT trends that you're particularly excited about. Is there anything as you look towards the future and you see how IT is evolving, whether it's tools, whether it's processes and methods, are there other trends that particularly excite you and that you plan on employing at Amedisys?
Sure. I think there are two that come to mind that are, you know, on our radar screen, and we're doing well in some of them and making progress towards others. But the mobile computing world that we live in, everything's getting smaller, faster, and quicker. So mobile agility and computing is important. And in collaborative technology, you know, we're all about the continuum care of our patients in and out of the episode and tracking them and taking care of them. And as our market opportunities come about, you know, collaborative technology is going to be critical to our strategy going forward.
And let me ask you to follow up on each of those. I think those are really interesting ones to call out. From a mobile computing perspective, are your investments more geared towards mobile computing for employees, for customers? Is it a combination of those?
We deal with caregivers, which are clinicians in the field. So mobile computing, slate-type computers, thin, easy to use, user-friendly, you know, good experience-type computing is going to be an important strategy for us going forward, as well as our collaborative technology we're dealing with. Physicians who are ultimately our referral sources, they have tendency to have technology and they need web browsing type of capability to interact with us. So we pretty much have to work on all platforms that they might have. And the different physicians have different platforms. So we got to be agnostic to any type of technology platform they have.
And do you find that the clinicians are of becoming more tech savvy or more demanding as to what IT can do for them? Is this a population that's becoming more interested in technology, or is there a break based on generations or anything like that?
Well, we're fortunate at Amedisys to be probably one of the only, the largest home health company for sure that's on a point of care technology today. So our caregivers tend to be more technology savvy than our competitors right now on our scale. In fact, it would be fair to say we're probably the largest point of care platform out there in the home health industry at this stage. So our clinicians tend to be very trained on the technology and very capable of using the technology to take care of patients and improve our quality outcomes.
Do you have any idea what accounts for that difference? That seems like a pretty important difference and probably a source of competitive advantage.
We do believe it's a competitive advantage. You know, our caregivers follow a standard protocol using our systems. And through that, we have clinical tracks that create a consistency of execution. And through that consistency, in the end, we'll generate better outcomes for our company from a quality perspective. So patient care is first and foremost in the front of us as our priority, and using technology as a standard to deliver that care creates a better outcome for our patients.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Well, Patrick Thompson, thank you so much for joining us on the Forum on World Class IT and sharing some of your own insights from your very interesting background and the broad set of tasks that you have as part of your purview. We really appreciate you taking this time.
Thanks, Peter. Enjoy the conversation today. We'll be right back.
listen to a podcast in a series we call Meta Strategies Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategy's five principles of World Class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information about these five principles and sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metisstrategy.com. And please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metisstrategy.com. Our editor is Chris Davis, and our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.